time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Val brings us our quick tip of the week, saying, I got caught listening to your discussion about reducing file sizes, and one tip that might be interesting, you can drop a file into ChatGPT, give it a prompt to compress it to a preferred size, and it can handle that quickly. You can do it with images, you can do it with documents, whatever you want to compress, it will figure it out and do it. Thought that might be a neat addition to your tips. Val, I couldn't agree more. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1081 for Monday, March 17th, Corned Beef and Cabbage Day 2025. To Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in tips like that and we share them. You send in cool stuff found, we share them. You send in questions, we share those and discuss potential answers, sometimes even the right ones. We do it all so that each and every one of us can learn at least five new things every single time we get together. Our sponsors for today are coda.io/MGG, where you can go sign up for free for the one doc to rule them all. You can bring all your text and tables together. And our friends at screencastsonline.com/MGG, where you can now go to try it free for 7 days and then get a lifetime 20% discount on your subscription. We'll talk more about both of those in a little bit here. For now, here in sunny Austin, Texas, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here in New Hampshire, where you'll be soon, Dave, it's yes. a beautiful, almost 60 degrees day. So it's Pilot Pete.
Amazing.
Glad to see you guys, everybody. Code 1081, by the way. Police code 1081 is a call for a portable breathalyzer kit. So hopefully we won't need that today.
I travel with one of those.
Well, there you go.
I have only because it I got it at like a conference or something. It from the Backtrack people.
Okay.
And it's actually pretty cool. It's standalone, or it syncs to software on your phone and you can track things over time, but it'll show you your blood alcohol content.
Nice. And
it is interesting to test that in, you know, after you've had one cocktail, two cocktails, whatever, and learn like,
where you are.
That's where that is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting.
Nice.
Yeah. Right. I'll put a link in the show.
Corned beef and cabbage day. Also another day. I think it's
St. Annie's Day.
St. Patty's Day.
That's it. I didn't wear my green. I'm in trouble.
Oh, I did wear green today. I got a shirt here. I'm in Austin for South by Southwest, as I mentioned. I did see that Eddie Q and Ben Stiller thing. They did keynote, I guess, just the two of them, a conversation about Severance and making great products and all that stuff. It was really interesting seeing Eddie Q talk about Apple in general. I mean, he was very complimentary and praised Severance a bunch and, you know, was proud of Ben and his team. And Ben said he loved working with Apple because they're not heavy handed about like telling him what to do or anything like that. But everything that Eddie said was like so steeped in what we heard from Steve Jobs over and over again, like that the Apple culture is just like in his bones, or at least in his PR talking points. But you know, he says, you know, at Apple, like comparing them to Netflix, which Ben sort of brought up, and Eddie said, well, you know, here at Apple, we choose to do a few things and do them excellently. So we can't afford to have flops. We don't just throw everything at the wall and wait to see what sticks. We kind of rely on everything to stick on the wall that we release. And, you know, I mean, it's that's the Apple way, but it was just interesting to hear him talking about that, even with selecting like TV shows.
Yeah. They've done a pretty good job of that. I will say there have been a couple what I would call flops.
Yes. Yes.
They're all creatively interesting at the very least.
That's fair. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can see why Apple chose each of the things that they do, even if it's not for me or for the masses either, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
The more important question is, how pink was Eddie's shirt?
It was pretty pink. Not Peter Norton pink, but yeah. Does that reference get lost on anybody?
The Peter Norton one?
Yeah.
Or the Eddie Q pink shirt one.
Well, we used to call, it's interesting, like probably the last time I used this phrase that I'm about to say, the pink shirt treatment, was when I was here in Austin. There was a suite of like hard drive repair tools called Norton Utilities. And Peter Norton wore a pink shirt on the box. And I think it was like even in the app somewhere or whatever. And it was like, it was magic. It would fix things, you know, it would work on, I'm pretty sure there was a Mac version too, but it was certainly a Windows version. And we ran both maybe it was just a Mac version. I don't know, but we ran it a lot and we called it the pink shirt treatment. And then one day I said that and, you know, people looked at me like, well, like you guys looked at me. So, you know, we stopped saying that.
I forgot about it, honestly, but you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter Norton.
Yeah.
Norton Utilities. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is I probably get billed, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a month for my Norton Utilities subscription for $469. And all I need to do is call this number if it's a problem.
Well, there's that.
Love those emails.
Jan Landy sent in a quick tip for us. If you are in Photos on your iPhone or iPad and you open a picture to look at closer, if you pinch to zoom in the top right of the photo, if you look closely, you will see the word crop. Click on it, tap on it, and it will open the photo editor in crop mode. I had no idea. It's hidden, though. It's like, you know, kind of buried in the photo. You got to know that it's there. And then, like everything, once you know, there it is. So, thanks for that, James.
So, question.
Yeah.
When it opens in crop mode, does it crop to your zoom?
Yes.
Like, is it preset to crop to your zoom?
I believe it did that online.
That would be cool.
I can't test it because my phone is my webcam
for
this particular thing.
So, if it doesn't, they missed an opportunity because I would assume would happen.
I tested it and I'm pretty sure it did. It was a very natural, like, yes, of course, this is what you want to crop to. Okay, great. Yeah. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. But if it doesn't, you're right. It was late at night when I did this, so I can't promise that I was correct.
Yeah. So I have a Photos tip that I ran across. I was like doing some research or something else. And I don't know about you guys, but like, few things happen, you know, often I'll take screenshots for things for work or whatever, things that I'm working on. More often than not, I accidentally take a screenshot somehow of some stupid thing that I really don't want, right?
Yes, and yes.
Those screenshots end up in Photos, right?
Yep.
I was looking around for something else and I found out that at least starting in iOS 18, and I don't know when it came into macOS, but you now have the option to hide screenshots from your main photo library. So you don't have to see them just sitting there in your main photo library. So in iOS, if you open up the Photos app and go to the All Photos tab, down at the bottom, there's a, I think it's called the filter icon. It's a round circle with an arrow up, arrow down. If you tap on that, there's actually view options in there and you can tap and uncheck screenshots and then screenshots won't show up in your main library. On macOS, you just open up Photos, you go to the All Photos tab, and it's under the View menu. You can select and uncheck screenshots. Screenshots will then, of course, still be accessible through the media album, under media types, screenshots, but they won't be in your main, like, photo library, All Photos area.
Right.
So it's a nice way to, like, clean that up so you don't have to see stupid screenshots.
Oh, man. I gotta do that. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
So I'm wondering, and you could probably set it to go only to screenshots to see them and quickly get rid of a bunch too.
Well, I mean, the Screenshots album is automatic. That's been around for the media type album's been around for a while. It's just you don't have to have them intermixed with your main. It's kind of like the when you hide a photo and it goes into the little hidden album, you know?
Yeah, right.
I don't know if people know that tip too, but like there's a hidden album and you can mark photos as hidden, which means keep it in my library, like don't delete it, but I just don't want to see it. So like that's a great way to cull and curate from your main album, like photos that you want to keep, but maybe they're not quite perfect. You know, they might be a little blurry or not quite the exact framing that you want, but you know, still a memory you want to keep, but you just want it dashed away from your main scrolling library.
And is the hidden album the one that you can password protect to?
Yes, I think you can.
I think you can. Yeah. I remember seeing that as an option. So
that's a different use of the hidden album, I think, but
I don't know what you're talking about, Adam, but you're probably right.
Different use case,
different use case. Right. That's yep. There you go. Andrew has our next quick tip, which is really a follow-up to something that I was talking about where I have a task list or a reminder rather to check my undated reminders, every Sunday. So actually it's probably on my list for today that I haven't looked at yet. Because otherwise I don't see them because I usually only look at reminders that are set for a certain date. And Andrew says, you can do this even easier or make this process easier by going into reminders, add list, choose smart list from the dropdown of list type, name it undated or whatever you like. For the first column of the parameters for the smart list, you choose date, and the second column you choose no date, and then boom, you get a list that only has undated reminders in it, which makes it even easier to parse and find those. So thank you for that, Andrew. I love it. That's great.
Very cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, I found one. I stumbled across this myself. Yesterday, I was looking for a way to get information about the Wi-Fi network I was on because I was trying to work with an Internet of Things camera that only worked on 2.4 gigahertz. And I wanted to make sure that when I turned on the network that I wanted, that indeed, because there was some confusion in my mind in looking at it on the router interface, whether it was broadcasting in both 5 gigahertz and 2.4 or just 2.4. Turns out if you hold down the option key and click on the little Wi-Fi symbol up in your menu bar, you get all kinds of cool info about your network that you're on, your IP address, the router's IP address, your MAC address, what security it's using, what channel you're on, hence which gigahertz band you're in. All kinds of stuff, the noise, the strength, the transmission rates. So once again, the option key comes to the rescue with a multitude of very cool stuff. And I found it gives you a few more items. Actually, well, I missed earlier today and I clicked on it, the tail scale with the option key held down. And it gives you like four more.
Really?
Option. Yes. Yeah. So it gives you things like, you know, you can quit, but leave its VPN active or it's some debug and that kind of stuff that I had not noticed or is not there if you just click on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that's a twofer for you there. Hold down the option key and, find all kinds of extra cool stuff just waiting for you there on your desktop.
Love that.
Laptop.
Yeah, that's a shout out to John F. Braun. That was one of his favorite things to mention at times for troubleshooting and handy little, you know, tips like that.
Yeah.
It's funny that you came across this week, Pete, because I too had basically this mentioned. However, I got to my hotel and here in Austin, and I knew that I was going to have all kinds of things to do. And so before I unpacked my suitcase, I checked the Wi-Fi and it was fine. It was a strong, like many bars connection, full bars, but no real speeds. I was getting maybe 3 megabits per second in both directions. And it was,
wait, am I still on an airplane?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, all right, I can do the show like this. I can survive fine. And then I looked, I did the option key thing and I realized I was on a 2.4 gigahertz network. And I'm like, okay, so this room's just in a crappy spot. I'm like, all right. And then I look under the table, kind of by the door of this Residence Inn, you know, suite or whatever it's called. There's a Ruckus access point on the floor and it's plugged into an Ethernet jack in the wall. And I look on the Ruckus thing and it says, you know, power over Ethernet into here. So I was like, okay, great. Should have everything it needs. No lights. I was like, all right, this is bad. I unplugged it. I replugged it. Still no lights. And so I was like, all right, well, this should now be fixable. So I texted you. I used the Marriott app and I texted the front desk. I said, hey, I'm heading. It's like 8 o'clock at night at this point. Like I'm heading out for about 3 or 4 hours. Here's what's going on. If you have somebody here on Saturday night that can take a look at this, great. Otherwise, it's fine for tonight, you know, anytime after, you know, 9:30 tomorrow morning, whatever. So I went and did what I did. I came back and sure enough, the box, there was a new box and it was lit up, but there was also a new Ethernet jack in the punch panel in the wall. And that's when I realized that this should have been on a wall across from it. Somebody knocked it off the wall and just tucked it under the, I have no idea how this transpired, but this would never have worked on any of the jacks over there. It was on the other side of the wall. I found where it had been like ripped out of the wall. So I don't know what transpired to cause that for someone to plug it back in somewhere else incorrectly. But it works. And now I've got to find
that's your story
connection.
And you're sticking with it.
Well, yeah. It's like, wait, I hope they don't blame me for this. Yeah, exactly. But you know, the texting the hotel came like saves the day again. I love being able to do that with the app.
More and more hotels are doing that. Yeah, it's nice.
So great. Because I was able to like explain everything without having to play the operator game. Like, you know, you need to write this down. The white Ruckus box, you know, it's like, but with texting it, they can just pass that along to whoever it is. I get to write the note. They don't, you know, I'm not relying on
They don't
on
have to
else.
Try it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it worked out and it's great. Like the Wi-Fi has been mostly great. I mean, I get like 60 to 80 megabits in each direction. So,
okay,
you know, could be worse. Could be a lot worse. In fact, I've had a lot worse. All right. Let's see. Shall we go on? We have one more quick tip from Gene. He says, I have an issue where new Safari tabs show up in all the darndest places. With lots of tabs open, I have to watch like an eagle to see where the newest tab might spawn. The Safari debug menu lets me choose to have all new tabs be after the last tab. Oh, great. My audio is going nuts because of my CPU. Love that. He says, which is my preferred action. There are lots of other choices as well. In order to enable the Safari debug menu, you have to run a terminal command. You first need to make sure that terminal has full disk access in settings, privacy, security, full disk access. And then there's a terminal command to enable or disable the full disk access. And I would put those in the show notes, except you can do it with Onyx, and Onyx makes it way easier. So you just go into the parameters section of Onyx, which is available for free from Titanium Software. And then you can just enable the Safari debug menu right there. So I'll put a link to Onyx in the show notes. But I love this. It's great because, yeah, the option that's the default is very, let's see, it's a new tabs. I got to find where it is. But it tab ordering. Yes. Position of new tabs is after last related tab. Well, what does that mean? Like they're all in the web browser. How unrelated could they be? Like, yeah. So, I don't know. But, yep. So, thanks to Gene, we now can put those where we want them.
All right, folks, let's talk about chaos. You know, the kind where you start a project, open up 17 tabs, a few spreadsheets, and wait, where did that document go? Oh, now it's in Slack, isn't it? Or wait, was it a text? That's where our sponsor Coda saves the day. It's like one tab to rule them all, combining docs, spreadsheets, and even AI-powered tools into a single organized space. No more chasing down rogue files or trying to remember which apps Steve swore we're all supposed to be using this week. I've used Coda with one of my businesses, and I'll tell you, it's like giving your workflow a much-needed espresso shot. It's good for the workflow. Espresso, bad for me. Good for the workflow. Everything just clicks together, and I love it. Plus, it keeps us so organized that even, like, I think our cats are going to start making project timelines. It's so great. Don't get caught in spreadsheet limbo. Try Coda today. More than 50,000 teams trust Coda to keep them more aligned and focused. To try it for yourself, go to coda.io/MGG today and get started for free. That's coda.io/MGG to get started for free. Coda.io/MGG. Get started for free. And our thanks to Coda for sponsoring this episode.
All right. Time for some questions here.
It is.
I think, Adam, are you going to read Bob?
Yeah, I got Bob. He's got a question for us. He says, my question is, when is it safe to actually disconnect the drive from the Mac? The light on the drive is still flashing, which to me means it's still in operation. In Windows world, you have to wait for the safe to remove message and any lights on the drive to go out. I failed to do so long ago on a Windows machine and haven't been able to read that flash drive since. I've never seen such a safe to remove message on macOS, but I don't want to get caught. I also have the same issue with an external hard drive I have connected for Time Machine. More than once, I've received a nasty gram stating that the drive was not properly disconnected. Yes, I've been caught.
Bob, just rip that sucker out. I probably won't lose any data. Oh, no, that's not the answer. Yeah, man, that is so disconcerting. It would be nice to have that message. I think that other operating system kind of does that for you. It says, hey, it's now safe to remove.
Yeah.
The first thing I would do is open Disk Utility and see if the drive's listed there. And if it's not, you're probably okay to pull the plug. If the light is still flashing on the drive itself, rather than pull the plug, I'd go into Activity Monitor and click on the disk tab and see if there's anything reading, any activity reading, writing to the disk there. If there is, then I'd try the force quit and see if that helps. There's probably some terminal commands or something you could use as well, but seems to me that Disk Utility and Activity Monitor are the two simplest, most straightforward ways to make sure that the drive is done reading and writing. So, Dave, you got thoughts on that, I think, because you answered that question, too.
I think Adam had something to chime in with.
Oh, okay.
I probably have the same message as you, Dave. The easy Mac way to deal with this is go into your Finder and in the sidebar, find the drive and just eject it. And if it won't eject, it'll tell you it can't eject if it's in use. And if you do eject it, it will unmount it, and then you can pull the cable. Although, I will say this. Real geeks just pull the cable.
Yeah. It's true.
Rip that sucker out.
I do often rip them out and see the little nasty message. I think what he's saying is that he has done that. He's ejected it in the Finder. It's no longer there in the Finder, but he sees lights flashing still on the drive.
And which scare the hell out of you.
Well, what when
right?
When it's out, when it's no longer appearing in the Finder, that means it's unmounted, right? So that's that. However, it's still powered, and it's possible that the drive itself is doing housekeeping or whatever.
Yeah, it's got some cache going on, maybe writing to the hard drive.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully flash drives aren't using write caches because that
would be fair enough.
Disaster, but it could be, right? So maybe wait till the lights stop flashing if you're worried about it. But I like your suggestion of looking in disk utility at the very least, just to confirm that when you see it gone from the finder, it's also unmounted in disk utility. It should still appear in disk utility as an unmounted right. volume, right? But yeah. it you know, confirming that the status change is reflected simultaneously in both finder and disk utility would kind of be a good thing. Because, yeah, at that point, it should be safe to yank. So, but waiting until the lights calm down, not the worst thing.
As he mentioned there, though, I mean, honestly, my Mac likes to rip the drives out just from time to time no reason
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Love that. When you get the message, it's like, you should properly eject that drive. It's like, no, you should properly eject that drive. You
exactly.
did
like,
this.
Like, I didn't touch it. You just decided to boot it off the...
Yeah.
You just decided to unmount it on your own for whatever reason.
For whatever reason. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it will run for fun in our Discord chat says, I'm old school, but I miss activity lights, from what we used to have. I guess I got over having activity lights for drives, 'cause we certainly had those and you could watch the activity lights go. I guess I got over that with SSDs. But with drives, I more than looking at the light, I would just listen. You'd hear when it was like crunching and not crunching most of the time. But I still use, that's why I like, you know, iStat menus or stats or any one of the myriad menu bar things to tell me when there's network activity, because I still miss my modem lights, but that's okay. It's fine. I'll get over it. Carl has a question for you, Adam.
Okay.
Carl says, on last week's show, you talked about logging in with Apple ID. What's the difference between that and using the hide my email feature? I use hide my email if I have to sign into a new app or website using an email address as a login name. Uh-oh. Did I lose you guys? I think I lost him. I definitely lost him. This is fun. Hopefully it's coming back. This is where the hotel Wi-Fi isn't the best. But we'll get there, I think. If it has to go too much longer, I will cut this out of the audio. But
believe we're still streaming.
Adam, so the audio version is, I have the truth for the audio version, and now we're back. So I read the question for you. Now, can you answer it?
Yes.
It's great.
So this is a great question, because I guess last time we didn't really clarify. We had the question about sign in with Apple and how that works. So we kind of talked about that. These two features are somewhat related, but also separate. So when you're using the hide my email feature, that is something you can use when, say, you're signing up for a service or an account on a website and you want to use an aliased version or not your actual iCloud email address. So what Apple will do is they will generate a aliased email address, and I think it usually shows it to you. We also talked about last time where you can go and review the emails that you've set up, but it creates a fake, quote unquote, aliased email address that's given to the site you're registering with, so they don't have your actual iCloud email. And then what that will do is that will relay through Apple's servers and go to your actual iCloud. So you're not disclosing your email address to said service when you're registering for it. And you can use that, you know, when you're signing up directly. Now, the thing is there, if you're signing up directly for an account with that service and it asks you a bunch of other questions like what's your name, what is your, you know, what security questions do you want, and all those things that you get, what's your address, what's your phone number, you're providing all of that data to that service or website that you're signing up with. If you're using sign in with Apple, the big difference is you can still use an aliased email. You can choose an option to use an aliased email, so i.e. not provide to that service your actual email address. But when you're registering or logging into that website, what is actually happening is you're going to Apple's servers, you're authenticating and registering with Apple. And if it's creating a new account for you, then what happens is after Apple has verified that you know your Apple login, they send a token, or just basically a encrypted key, back to the main service along with the bare minimum amount of information they need to create an account for you, if you haven't created an account yet, to register you. Usually that's just your first name, last name, I think, in most cases. And then again, if you've chosen to use the hide my email address, that aliased email, and then it creates the account and logs you in. But the key difference there is you're logging in through Apple's servers, not through the third party servers. Apple's authenticating you, saying, yes, this is this person. Now go ahead and log them into the service. And it's all done through, I mean, there's a million other third party services you can do this. You know, I like Apple's because I trust Apple, but you know, it's like when you sign in with Google or sign in with Facebook or sign in with Twitter or sign in with whatever, they all work more or less the same. You all right, Pete?
Everything okay over there?
Sorry, excuse me. Yeah, I thought I hit the mute in time. I did not.
I think you were muted, folks. I think you unmuted for that. So that was, we appreciate that. That's great.
But hopefully that clarifies it. But yeah, hide my email is a thing where you can hide your email and generate aliased iCloud email addresses to use when you're registering. I think there might even be a way. I've never done it, but I think there might even be a way to just generate one just randomly through iCloud, but I'm not positive on
that. Yeah, I think there is.
I think you can.
Yeah, I think there is. Yeah.
So. Yeah. And then sign in with Apple is more about protecting your account information. And so that service will never have your login. And like we talked about last time, the nice thing about that too is you can go into your iCloud account and you could revoke that registration from that third-party service. From Apple's side, you don't have to even be logged into that service. So if that service were compromised or you suddenly decided, you know, I don't want that account there anymore, you could just yank that login from the Apple side, which is kind of nice.
Yep. Cool. Thank you for explaining that. That's great.
Yeah.
Shall we move to David in Texas?
We shall do so at this time.
Yeah. I'll be Dave in Texas. He can be David in Texas.
All right. Yeah. So David writes in, hi guys. I share a group message thread with six or seven other people. Let's say it's called Golf Buddies. Not everyone in the group uses iPhones, but that's never been a problem. It all just turns all the bubbles green as we're all using SMS or whatever non-iMessage protocol. But sometime after iOS 18 came out, the group message thread got split into two. One day, late in 2024, we were chatting and suddenly there were two Golf Buddies threads on my phone. And not just on mine, but at least some of the other guys in the group were seeing the same thing. The newest messages were only appearing in one such thread, but not in both. I thought I would clean things up by renaming the threads so at least we could all be on the same page going forward. I left the oldest one as Golf Buddies and the most recent post as Golf Buddies 2. That way, I reason, we'd all know to post in number 2, and the older post would still be accessible if someone wanted to scroll back. Well, the problem has continued. Several times in the past couple of months, I have sent or received a message to find out that there are now two Golf Buddies 2 threads. Oof. Ouch. This week, it's happened again. It's maddening. This wasn't an issue prior to iOS 18. I'm running 18.3.1, but I can't speak to what other versions others are using on their phones. All I know is it's making us not want to try and communicate this way any longer. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions on how to fix this?
So it's interesting because I got David in Texas's message when Dave arrived in Texas, and I thought, oh man, you know, right? I think I know exactly what's going on here. And it has to do with the RCS addition to iOS 18 with some carriers. And then I thought, God, when is RCS coming to Mint Mobile? And so I asked ChatGPT and it sort of had an answer, but Perplexity had a very specific answer. And it's like, right, yeah. With iOS 18.4 beta, you now have the ability to do that. And I was like, oh, amazing. I'm going to update to the 18.4 beta while I'm traveling. So I did that and it's been fine. Other than exactly the problem that David is talking about, because I have several group message threads, mostly with my bandmates in the various bands I play in. We are every band I'm in, it has mixed, you know, Android and iPhone people. And evidently I was the last holdout for these to move them to RCS. Once I got RCS, the threads, instead of saying text message SMS, now they say text message RCS. And I was like, woohoo, this is great. And so I texted one of the bands where one of the guys had actually asked, hey, can we move this to RCS? Like, you know, we can't send files around or anything with SMS. And I was like, nah, I'm the holdout. So I texted it and it seemed to go through fine. And then a second thread appeared, and then three threads appeared for one of the other bands I'm in, because I wasn't the first one to text that group. And it became this disaster where not only does everyone have multiple threads, they are not the same. And so the near as I can tell, when you have a group of all SMS people that then changes to RCS, it is a completely new group. All of the devices see it as something brand new.
Ah, okay.
And then each device or each app, because right, you can do RCS with different apps on Android phones. So each app, messages on the Mac, on the iPhone, and then whatever you're using on Android, makes their own decisions about if and how to merge those threads. And no one has agreed on how that should happen. In my opinion, they should all just be merged into one. But that's not how it goes. So you wind up with these things, and I've been seeing it happen all week, where threads just keep like respawning, and you don't have the same amount of history, and nobody's got the same thing in both places, and it's a mess. I don't know what the answer here is, because I think part of the issue is if somebody has a weak data connection or can't communicate RCS for any reason, it falls back to SMS. And now you're creating another permutation, and the whole thing starts all over again. So I don't know that there's an end to this. I don't know that this is just a migration pains. Like, once we get through this, it'll all be good. Reading David's email, and that's why I wanted to have you read all of that, because he's been at this for months. Like, for me, it's been single digit days. And
right, because we just got there.
Yeah, because we just got there. Mint Mobile. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I have no hope after reading David's message that it's going to get better after I get past this, you know, first few days of growing pains. Yeah. And my guess
is, it never occurred to me that that would be, you know, sinking is hard. It seems like RCS is harder.
Well, it's not. Well, it's just messaging. Go ahead,
Adam. Yeah, but say it's creating these permutations. Let me get out of the way. Go ahead, Adam.
No, I was just saying, this is the first time I obviously heard this. I didn't read that earlier. And as you were describing it, and Pete was reading the question, my first thought was exactly what you just described, Dave, where it's like, this has to be the kind of thing where the first time it flips to RCS, it creates a new thread, and everybody's supposedly on our RCS. But if you get one person coming in there who's not on RCS for whatever reason, I didn't even think about the weak signal thing, but you know, you get one person come back into that thread with SMS, it's like, well, now we got to split it off again and put everybody back in SMS mode.
Yep.
And then, all right, nope, we're going to put everybody back in RCS mode, but we're creating a new thread every time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-oh. Did I lose you guys again? No, I didn't. Okay.
No.
I thought my issue was related, and this was like, you know, we all get so me focused, right? I thought, well, I'm running iOS 18.4 beta, so of course this is like gonna be flaky. This is new. And then as soon as I read David's email, I was like, wait, this isn't new. This has been there since iOS 18, like beta over the summer. They've had plenty of time to work this kink out. The only difference now is that that I have access to this. Like, they put in the profile for Mint Mobile to be RCS in 18.4. But, you know, David's been having this problem since December. And my guess is, as we are talking about this and you're listening to this, many of you are going, yeah, same. So, yeah.
Yeah. That sucks.
It sucks. Yeah. Yes.
What's up? What's up?
You're not wrong. This could be the thing that drives everybody to WhatsApp. You're not wrong.
Well, how about this? I mean, this feels like something Apple could handle in software, or any messaging app could handle in software, right? It's like, this thread is called the same thing. It has all the same people. Let's use some little Apple intelligence behind it and go, you know what? We're just going to merge these into one in the software on our side. It just to like help people out here.
Well, and the thing
like,
is,
it can't be that hard to figure out that this is, this group is this thread, right?
It's doing some of that. That's the problem, is it thinks it's doing exactly what you just described. And for some reason, it can't keep doing it. But that would only solve the problem for Apple users.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the Android users.
Do we care
users,
about anybody else? I'm just kidding.
No.
is, you said earlier, this is a me problem.
This
right?
is a me. Yeah. Right. Yeah. As long as my thing's fine, I don't care what happens on the other side. Although I really do, because I have seen like some of my bands use Slack to communicate, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And some don't. And we've tried it with one, and people are like, I don't want to have to put another app on my phone. Like, I don't understand this. This is stupid. And it's change resistance, right? You know, it's like, I don't want to do that. Let's just use one sort of, you know, monolithic thread in SMS. It's like, God, I can't imagine anything worse, but sure. Let's do that. Makes it really easy to separate conversations. Great. You know, stupid memes and important details for gigs, all just mashed together in one. Outstanding.
Excellent.
Just what I wanted. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Excellent.
Oh, it's nuts.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's anything.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really solve anything.
No, there's nothing any of us can do. I don't think. If there is, feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Please tell us.
You heard him. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
Exactly. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
Time to go to John, Father John.
Let's do it. Yes. Well, on a Sunday afternoon, Father writes in, "Hi, guys. I am trying to get back to normal Apple Mail," whatever that means. "I turned off the priority columns, but I still don't get the number of new mails on the icon before I open mail. In the past, just looking at the icon, it would say there are so many specific number of new mails to be read. Now, it only shows a small fraction of that. Is there any way to get back to the real number of new mail messages to show up on the icon?" And I'm assuming he's talking the badge.
Yeah.
"Thanks as always for the show, and look forward to seeing you at MacStock, Father John."
Yep. So I think what is likely happening here is just the setting that is in mail for the badge count. What I would go in and do is double check your settings for the dock unread count in the mail settings. So if you go under open up mail and go under settings and then go to general, there is a little drop down that says dock unread count, and that can be inbox only or all mailboxes. So I'm guessing that maybe he is looking for all mailboxes instead of maybe inbox only. But I would play around with that setting and see if that's what the issue is.
Yeah. Yes. We have to assume we're understanding the issue correctly. And your solution is the correct one for the issue we believe we're understanding.
So. Right. I mean, it could be something different, but without more detail, I don't know. But that would be my guess. If you're seeing an account that you're not expecting that, like if that's feeling like it's not the right count.
Yep.
That would likely be what the issue is. I was just noticing an option in there that says you can also set it to today, which looks like a smart folder, but I'm wondering if that's a smart folder I just have set up on my mail.
Maybe. I don't have mail.
So can
open.
You set up like smart? I know I was trying to open up mail and now I can't find the window. Somehow I closed it. So.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. But, interesting.
Yeah. Play around with that setting and see what you got.
Yep.
Hopefully that helps.
Bill has our next question. Bill asks, "Any advice on which domain name registrars offer the best deals? I've been using GoDaddy, but its fees are getting pretty high for a single year. $25 for a .net, full domain privacy and protection, another $20. The only thing we use our domain for is to keep stable email addresses, and we have no website or other activity. The email is handled by a long-held Google G Suite, the free legacy edition. Ah, yes, quite coveted. My automatic renewal, I have a few of those and I'm happy about it. My automatic renewal hits in April. So any advice would be appreciated. I will do a bit of Google food too, but I trust your recommendations. Thanks, gentlemen. And repeat.
Yeah, thanks for that.
it's never been articulated that way before. So yeah.
Right, yeah. So hey, by act of Congress, I'm a gentleman. I have proof hanging on my wall.
That's true.
Oh boy. Anyway, so I used to use GoDaddy, and boy, if you like upsells, go there. It's constant.
They're really good at it. Yeah.
Oh. Brutal. If 15 turndowns before you can finally get to your checkout box. But I digress. I've been a happy hover.com user for years and years and years. I still have most of my stuff there. Not all of it, though. Their support's great. And it used to be, and it's been a long time, used to be you could call their telephone number for support, and within one or two rings, you're talking to a live person.
Wow.
Mail, you know, voicemail boxes to navigate through or any of that kind of stuff. And they'll help you set up, you know, whatever pointers you need, that sort of stuff. Haven't done that in a while, though, so I don't know if that's still the case. When I started the So There I Was podcast, they suggested I use Namecheap.com. And I looked on there, and they offer a .net domain for $10.48 a year. And it looks like the retail renewal on that is $15 a year. So I would look at Namecheap, Namecheap.com, and I found them pretty simple to set up pointers for mail and redirects and forwarding and all that kind of stuff. Pretty simple, straightforward, good stuff. I've been happy with that. And then I think he also mentioned in there in security about the privacy and all that. I don't have that on Namecheap. I just used a Florida address where I don't get mail, but I happen to have a townhouse. So that's me. I swear it's me, but you can't get me there. So maybe if it's really important to you that you receive mail and use privacy, go to a Postal Center USA and rent a mailbox for however much. That's probably more expensive than just paying the $18 or whatever for privacy. But
do you have anything to add to this, Adam, before I add my 2 cents?
I wasn't sure if I was on mute or not. I've been a happy Hover user as well. I was trying to log in to see, I don't remember them charging extra for the security privacy thing. I don't think I pay extra for it.
I think
it's part of the registration, if I'm remembering correctly, but it's been a long time since I've been messing with domains. So I wanted to double check that before I said that, but if you guys know differently, let me know. But yeah, I've been super happy with Hover forever. They've been my main domain register for over a decade now, probably.
Yeah.
I highly recommend everybody move to Cloudflare. They added a registrar to their services some point in the last few years, and they don't charge a markup on it. So they basically pass through the cost of whatever it actually costs to register the domain. And then that's it. And then they'll host your DNS for you too. And they host DNS and proxy probably half the internet. The only downside to using Cloudflare for your registrar is that they don't work with all top level domains. So, you know, some of the kind of, you know, I think they work with .tv, but you know, those kinds of domains,
.info, .sports.
Yeah. I mean, I think they have a lot of them. They have more and more all the time, but I love Cloudflare for all of that stuff. And I have been moving all of my domains in there as I can. Like I said, there's some that you just can't move into there, but otherwise, yeah, I'm
how hard and what is the process to move a domain into something like that? I mean, obviously you have to unlock it at your previous one.
Yeah. It depends on how you're doing it. Sometimes they'll walk you through it. Sometimes it's just put in your login credentials and we'll take care of it from here. But other times it's, you know, here's screenshots of what you, you know, a how to essentially. Here's what you got to do. You go get the thing, you paste it in. It's really not a big deal. I probably do it 4 times a year, you know, as I get renewal notices. It's like, oh, nope, I'm not paying Namecheap that anymore. Namecheap is the other one that I use. They are, they have a few more top level domains than Cloudflare does. So I use them for some stuff. Yeah, I'm very happy. Cloudflare.
I'll have to look into Cloudflare. Yeah. I mean, we use Cloudflare for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, for the company I work for. And I think a nice thing with their DNS stuff is I think even at the free tier, they offer some web application firewall and other security things that you can do as well.
And
they don't charge for
everything with Cloudflare. The privacy is on automatically. They don't charge extra for that either. I mean, Cloudflare's, they're an interesting company, and I know there's, you know, there's, I'm sure everybody has skeletons in their closets somewhere, but they really kind of hold true to their mission of keeping the internet, you know, secure, fast, reliable, private, the kind of all the things. So
it's I switched to them for my DNS.
Oh yeah, they're excellent for DNS. Yeah, for sure.
1.1.1.1.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Oh, for DNS lookups.
For the DNS server.
Yeah.
DNS lookups.
Right.
And then, I used to use Google what was the other one back in the day? I don't remember, but
yeah,
they're great for that.
So I just looked up a .NET is $11.84 and renews at that on Cloudflare.
Interesting, because I just did one with Lisa the other day, and it was like $9.
Oh. Yeah. Running a sale or something.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get down to cool stuff found at some point. I'll talk about DNS too. But
all right. Brian,
I started purging my domains just to, I realized I've registered so many domains over the years that I just held on to like forever for projects that I know I'm never ever going to do. So I finally like let stuff stop auto renewing this year. Try to save some money.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea. Yep. You know that the harvesters will get it, which is the part that always bothers me, but you know, it's how it works. So. Brian had an interesting issue that he wrote in with. He said he got caught. And the issue was that he has his documents folder synced to iCloud. Okay. He also has Synology. Oh, and I lost you guys again, didn't I?
I'm here.
He has his documents folder synced to iCloud, and then he has his Synology drive also syncing that same documents folder to his disk station, doing two-way syncing. And he was cleaning some things out and wound up deleting everything from both, and lost, he had a backup, so he didn't lose everything, but he certainly got himself into a pickle with this. And it's a long sordid tale, but the lesson is double syncing to the same folder to two different cloud services is opportunity for disaster. If you want to have that, you need to do a one-way sync for one of them, or, and you can't do this with iCloud, unfortunately, but like if you, in his case, you know, he has a Synology. I have a Synology as well. And I have my Synology use Synology Cloud Sync to sync to my Google Drive, my Dropbox, my box.com. It syncs to all of those. None of my devices do. All of my devices only sync to my Synology NAS. So it's taking care of it in a layered approach. So it's not the Mac trying to sync both, and then you wind up syncing deletions that you didn't intend to do in various directions. So beware of double syncing, I think is the lesson here. And really understand what you're doing, why you're doing, and if you can't come up with a good reason to be double syncing, don't do it. I mean, you could, like I said, you could do a one-way sync. You could have a daily carbon copy cloner script or whatever that you know syncs one direction. I think, Adam, you use a what's the thing you use?
ChronoSync.
ChronoSync, that's it. Yeah. So, and that's syncing in real time one way, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can set it up multiple ways. I mean, you can. It's an amazing, versatile tool for. Yeah. But yeah, I used it mainly for local syncing to a Drobo. But I mean, you can do it over the network. You can do it, like, it's super versatile, and you can set it up in a million ways. But yeah, I have a number of folders that I sync where I do not sync deletions.
Right.
Basically.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of the key, is knowing what you're doing and why you're doing it. It the two-way syncing with more than one engine on the same folder, we've seen it cause so many. John Brunn had an issue with that.
Fraught with danger, is what I say.
It is fraught with danger. That's the right. Yes, yes. Double syncing, fraught with danger.
All right, listen. We spend all our money on our Apple gear, right? We caress it. We admire it. We maybe even whisper sweet nothings to our Macs at night. Why not then actually learn how to use all this stuff to its full potential? And that's where our sponsor, Screencasts Online, comes in. They've been cranking out top-tier video tutorials for nearly 20 years before YouTube even existed. Every week, they drop a full-length Apple tutorial plus a bonus tip video covering everything from macOS tricks to hidden third-party app features that might just change our lives, or at least save us from rage quitting Safari. We can just do it on a scheduled basis because it's reasonable like that. And now, and this is new, you can try it free for 7 days. No money up front, no excuses. And because you're a Mac Geekab listener, you get 20% off your subscription for life. So don't get caught fumbling through settings. Head to screencastsonline.com/MGG and start unlocking your Mac's full power today. Remember, you can try it free for 7 days and then 20% off your subscription at screencastsonline.com/MGG. Such an awesome thing. Thank you for doing that. And our thanks to Screencast Online for sponsoring this episode.
All right, let's do some cool stuff found. My first one is certainly a travel tip. As I was packing, I knew I was going to be here for 8 days, and that's a long time to be in one hotel room. And so I like to do things to make it feel like home. And in fact, it's a question I often ask of touring musicians on GigGab. What do they do to make hotel rooms feel like home? Because, you know, they spend a lot of their time. One of my favorite tips was from Brian Ray, Paul McCartney's guitar player. He brings scarves and he drapes them over the lamps. And, you know, most of the lamps are not incandescent bulbs anymore, so that's relatively safe. But he says, they fold down flat. Right. Yeah, exactly. But they fold down flat and they look, you know, they're not much to travel with. And then yet can kind of turn a hotel room into something slightly less sterile. I opted to go with the electronic route, and I used the JBL Pulse speaker, which looks like a lava lamp. And the lighting in, if you're watching the YouTube video, the lighting in this room is kind of weird. So it may not be super obvious that it is pulsing like a lava lamp and you can control it, but it's a speaker, and then it can light up your room and you can turn off the other lights and just kind of have that going. And it adds some nice ambiance to the, nice. To the room. Yeah. I traveled with the, Pulse 4 because I realized I don't have a Pulse 5 yet, but the sound is great out of this thing. And you can have it react to the music or not. And there's a little app that you can use to control it. And it's fun. So, you know, something $250 makes your room a little less sterile. So,
yes, that's the second time you use that word. And the irony is not lost on me. Sterility in a hotel room has never been something I've been too worried about. Oh, this one's too clean.
Yeah. Well, there's that.
Just saying, different sterile.
Different kind of sterile. One type of light I do not recommend you bring with you is a black light.
Do not. Don't bring a black light to your hotel room.
Bring a black light. No black lights in the hotel room.
You'll wind up cowering in the corner.
You will not stay in the room.
Yep. Oh, sorry, folks.
Nope. That is, it's good advice.
There you go. All right. Yeah. Well, how about I take us to the one that Andrew gave us?
Right.
He was listening to the show, and he said there was a discussion about calendars and giving someone a link so they could make a booking in your calendar based on your free time. He says, over the years, I've used Microsoft Excel, Calendly, and they all work to a certain extent, but at a cost. Then I discovered TidyCal at TidyCal.com. And it's a lifetime of service for $27 US. Key features, he says, I get a link that I can give to anyone to book appointments for varying lengths of time. I have my own online page with booking options. For example, I can link to this from Linktree / Andrew Woodward. Oops, sorry about that. Leave them alone. And I can see the appointments in the calendars. I give it visibility to my Apple iCloud account. And if I had them, Microsoft Exchange and Gmail as well. It drops appointments into whichever calendar I want. In my case, I have it set up to use a specific calendar in Apple and iCloud for my TidyCal appointments. I can block times out that it can't make appointments. So even if I'm free, I have run polls to find of people to find the best time. So what else do you need for $27 lifetime? It's fully featured and it's a no-brainer. And I played with the link a little bit. I really like the fact that you can, he has it set up. Hey, you can book me for 15 minutes, half hour, hour, that kind of stuff. So being able to set that those different times was cool. And you can set up one-to-one meetings or group meetings in different locations. Pretty cool little piece of gear, it looks like. TidyCal. Someone has gone, made some effort to solve that.
Huh.
I don't know if it hits all the links. I did go back and look at the previous question on that to see. I forget what it was. He was trying to link like three of them together. And
Zoho was one of them. Yeah.
Zoho. Yeah. So
we've got some more follow-ups on that that we'll probably get to in the next episode. But yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I mentioned that I am excited about backpacks that have something unique, something I've never seen before. Unique might be incorrect because I haven't looked at every single backpack that's out there, but certainly something I haven't seen before. And we mentioned the one from Portland Gear last week. The one that I brought with me to South by Southwest here is perhaps even for me, even better. And it's the Nomatic Travel Pack, N-O-M-A-T-I-C. Now, looking at this, it looks like your standard backpack. Full size, I'll call it. I got the 20-liter version, which is generally the full-size backpack. And it looks good, fits your laptop in there. Where it starts to get interesting is, you know how laptop compartments on a lot of backpacks are what they call TSA compliant, where they flip completely open, right? Mm-hmm. So that you can lay it flat without taking your laptop out. If they need you to do that, you just lay it flat. That's nice. But what's really cool is that the front compartment, the big one that you put all your crap into, also opens up completely full. So you can pack that front compartment top down. Like laying the backpack on its back, you just open it up and you can see everything. So you're never digging to get to whatever the heck is at the bottom of it.
More like a suitcase than a pack.
Yes. And it's interesting that you say that. I'll get to that. But yeah, it's more like, you can certainly only open a little bit of the top and then treat it like a normal backpack. And there's some circumstances where that's the right way to get in there. But when you want to, you can open it up and really kind of see everything. And it's got some interesting pockets inside that you probably wouldn't have in a backpack where you couldn't do that. And that opens up a lot. And it has it's got three pockets, the big one in the middle, the one for your laptop, and it's got another sleeve for like your iPad. And then a front pouch that kind of is an organized pouch for, you know, things like pens and chargers and things like that. Great. It looks great, feels great, all of those things. Does not look any bulkier than you would expect it to. It's actually kind of lightweight and, you know, it works really well. Where it gets interesting is that if you want, you can expand it another 10 liters to be a 30 liter backpack. And at that point, you open it from the other side and it has a shoe case and it looks like a carry-on suitcase. And so this backpack turns into a weekender bag in a heartbeat, and you don't have to, I carried it around all week to the conference and stuff on the plane. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like it's got anything extra to it to do this. Like they've really done it well. So that when it expands or when it's not expanded, you're not carrying around something that feels bulky. It's really amazing. I'm pretty stoked with it. So yeah, that's the Nomadic travel pack. That's the one you and I saw at CES, Pete.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and they weren't giving them away. Darn it.
No, no, oh, these are $300. So, or $299. So it definitely, but that's what most backpacks are in that like $175 to $300 range. Yeah. The Portland Gear one that we talked about last week for $99, it amazes me. I found another one at South By that opens similar to that. And I don't have the name right in front of me, so I'll mention it on another episode, but it's similar to what the Portland Gear does. And it was like $80 or something. So that's coming. Yeah. So
very cool.
Yep. Yep. So fun.
Awesome.
Yupper. Yeah. What do you got next, Pete?
So, well, we mentioned the Cloudflare before, and I had been using them for DNS, and I don't know why, when, where, or how I asked the question about secure DNS, and I ran across Quad 9, the QAD number 9.
Yep.
DNS. Its DNS server is at 9.9.9.9. It's operated by the Quad 9 Foundation, which is a Swiss-based nonprofit organization. It was founded by IBM and the Global Cyber Alliance and all that, but it was designed to provide privacy-focused and security-enhanced DNS services. So if you want to do encrypted DNS, that's their primary. I forget what their secondary is. I think it's I'll find it in a bit.
Sure. We'll link to it.
But yeah, there you go. There's the link to it. But because it's Swiss jurisdiction and some of the strongest privacy laws in the world, independent from U.S. Agencies, Google and Cloudflare are U.S. based. So Quad9 is not. Legal challenges. I've looked at it. Quad9 has been involved in legal battles, particularly with the Sony Music, which tried to force them to block piracy-related domains, and they have strongly resisted censorship and continue to fight against any blocking requests.
Huh.
So just found it very interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
And here's the other cool thing. So they have like some malware protections. They speaking of blocking, they do try to block known malicious domains, protecting users from phishing and malware.
Cool. Are you using that as your primary at home now?
I am. And I've been very happy with it until, as I've mentioned pre-show, I was trying to get a camera to connect to, and I could not get it to connect to the internet, but in setting up Quad9, I had created a firewall rule that denied every DNS request outside of Quad9's DNS servers, and this camera was trying to use its own built-in DNS resolution, probably at Google or something like that, and it could not connect because its DNS was being blocked by my firewall rule. As soon as I lowered that firewall rule, the camera connected right up. That only took a few hours to find.
Instead, what I have found, if you want to set up a network like that where you're forcing everyone to use the same DNS, doing DNS redirection so that when a request goes out on, I think, port 53, it instead of going to whatever IP it said, you just redirect all requests, outbound requests on port 53 to 9.9.9.9. And that way you wouldn't have had that problem, right? The thing tried to use whatever DNS it was going to use, and you're going to 9.9.9.9. And it won't even know the difference unless it's trying to use like a DNS hijacker, because it won't get there. So
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, you're pre-hijacking it is what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, the way I set it up was to actually use my Mac Mini in the basement to be my DNS server.
Okay.
And then it's going out to 9.9.9.9. And
I mean, why wouldn't you set your router to be the DNS server?
I forget. There was some issue.
Okay.
Okay. But the thing is, when I was doing, I was going to like leaktest.net to see, and there were others, servers in the way. Oh, and by the way, it's called woody.net, and they're in New York. I'm going, this woody.net server keeps seeing my DNS queries. What's going on? And then finally realized, oh, that's all part of the Quad9 network.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, these other servers were seeing it, but they were Quad9 servers.
Got it.
Huh. So I forget the reason. There was some reason in there. As soon as I had my Etsy host file edited, I was good to go. And
sounds like it.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that I was doing there with the help of ChatGPT, and some of it came back to bite me, like not being able to get this camera to go. But once I finally figured out, okay, I'd created this firewall rule,
this is what I love about
it's a learning process.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. It's like you dive in head first, knowing that you're going
to get paralyzed.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the best way I know to learn this stuff is to just do it and figure out how to get yourself out of there. So,
yeah. What's your number again, Dave? I think I still have
that's
it.
That's right. No, it's changed. It's changed. I'm on RCS now, Pete.
Dave never answers my calls anymore.
No, it doesn't. They don't come through. It must be an RCS thing.
That's it.
Yeah. Any cool stuff found from you this week, Adam? I'm putting you on the spot, but
I was trying to think of something, come up with anything, but I don't buy stuff very much anymore.
Sure.
If I'm being
Oh, no. I think I lost him again. I think it's time to end the show. It's going to be time to end the show.
Well,
We're back. But
you were never gone, Dave.
Oh, you heard me all the way through that?
The entire time we heard you.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So
you know what? I can give you something, actually.
All right.
Why don't I give you guys a board game? So I'm at a point in my life where... there are just two of us in the house.
Right. Empty
my
nest.
Kids have grown and flown the nest and all that fun stuff. But we still love, as I think we've talked about, we love playing board games. So I've been on the hunt for two-player games to play. And there is a great one called Jaipur, J-A-I-P-U-R, I think, or E-R.
Okay.
I'm going to get the spelling wrong. We go down to the local brewery here and sit and play games. And we were playing that yesterday, and it is an excellent, fun, easy to learn, quick game. The basic premise, I'll try to give it to you, is you're basically a vendor in a bazaar, and you're trying to, or a buyer, I guess, for a Maharaja, and you're trying to buy things. And so you acquire camels and jewelry and gems and all these sorts of things. And that's the basic premise of it. But it's kind of like a trading game.
Yeah.
So you pick up resources and then you buy resources. And so each turn you're kind of doing that, and you're trying to ultimately earn points, and you play in three rounds, and you try to win two out of the three rounds, and whoever wins two out of three rounds wins. So, but it's just a fun little game.
And it's two players only. I'm looking at
two player only.
It turns out I'm in a similar scenario to you. And the best part about this, I love the recommendation of the game, because I didn't know about it. The best part about this was you saying that you and your wife take the game and go down to your local brewery and play. And I'm thinking, why have Lisa and I never done that with we could bring this down to Tideline, which is a thing near our house, and play and, you know, have a beer and then go home. Huh?
Exactly.
Oh,
that's what we do. We play gin rummy cards. Yeah. We'll play all kinds of games. But yeah, it's kind of a little weekly jaunt.
A little date night thing.
Usually.
I love that. That's amazing. Huh.
There you go.
Yep. I love that we do this every week. This little conversation that we have.
Yeah.
We should do it again next week. I think.
I bet we will.
I bet we will. Yeah, well, if the Wi-Fi works.
Well, there's that.
So evidently
and
having
the DNS servers.
Evidently having a strong signal to the access point right behind me here does not keep does not mean that the connection will remain consistent all the way through. But you know, it's all fine. Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. Our monthly giveaway, if you go to mattgeekab.com/giveaway, is you can register to win one of five copies of Unite 6 from BZG Apps, which I used again here to do the show, and I can use it on Sequoia to whatever we're on, macOS 15, to do separate web apps, because Apple broke the way those work for me. So I'm stoked. It's working great. I don't even think about it. And that's the kind of thing I like. So yeah, mattgeekab.com/giveaway. Thanks to BZG for doing that with us this month. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Make sure to check out our other shows. Adam's got a show with his daughter called the Debut Film Podcast. Pete has a show with someone who is not his daughter. So there I was for aviation enthusiasts. And I have two other shows, Business Brain for entrepreneurs and Gig Gab for musicians and music fans. So yeah, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for bearing with our fun little technical glitches and all that
there
stuff.
You go. And Adam, you were right. Who is privacy on domains on Hover is just a checkbox. It's included.
Amazing. That'll save you money right there. Yeah. Yep. Yavol. How about name? Does Namecheap charge you? I don't think they do.
I don't know. Yeah. I think they do, because I don't have it turned on.
Oh,
they,
and that's true. You don't have it turned on. You are cheap.
I'm a pilot after all.
All right. Well, so then even if Cloudflare is a dollar more than Namecheap for a year, you're still getting the benefit of the privacy in there. So, yeah.
But you know why you turn the privacy on, don't you?
Why is that, Pete?
So you don't get caught.
Well played, my friend.
Made on a Mac.
See you. Later.